The first question I have is basically to get from you a sense of how you would rate the American media in their coverage of the events of the attack last September. I mean, what's your assessment of how the American media has performed?
Well, let's see. Shamefully is a word that comes to mind, but that's not true in the case of, well, it depends. You know, you have to, their papers, and there's the New York Times, Washington Post, but overall, the American journalism, I think, was cowed, has been cowed and intimidated by the massive flag sucking, this patriotic orgy that the White House keeps whipping up. You know, if you criticize the president, it's unpatriotic and there's something wrong with you, you may be a terrorist. And I've been raving against this from the very beginning, but I don't have much of a constant national platform now because I've been working on this book, Kingdom of Fear, which is really describes what's going on over here, the Kingdom of Fear.
So in that sense, Hunter S. Thompson, there's not enough room for dissenting voices?
Well, there's plenty of room. There's just not enough. People are willing to take the risk. It's just sort of a herd mentality, I mean, lemming-like mentality. If you don't go with the flow, you're anti-American and therefore a suspect. And we've seen this before, any patriotic frenzies. And wartime, you know, they declare, it's very convenient having an undeclared war that you can call a war and impose military tribunals and wartime security. And then we got these generals telling us that this war is going to go on for a long, long time. Maybe it's not so much the generals now. The generals are a little afraid to invade Iraq, a little worried about it. But it's the civilians in the White House, it's a gang of thieving, just lobbyists for the military-industrial complex who are running the White House. And to be against them is to be patriotic. Then hell, call me a traitor.
Do you think that most of the American media, or say most of the influential American media, has bought that patriotism line and as a result are self-censoring themselves?
There we go. Self-censorship, yeah. That's a very good point. Yeah, I would say that. Now, there are always exceptions to that, but there have been damn few. Maureen Dowd in the New York Times, I'm trying to think of not that many have come to mind. And, you know, it's that corporate mentality of, well, what will the advertisers think? You know, in the Times against the president, therefore we won't advertise in it. That corporate kind of, we're all in this together thinking. So, yeah, so the publishers have always been Republicans, and the working press, usually Democratic, the smarter part of them. But not even the Democrats have been very strong on this, not strong enough to get anybody excited.
So is it the White House laying down what they think is appropriate journalism, or is it the news media outlets deciding that they have to be patriotic, that they're under some sort of undeclared duty at the moment to somehow reflect the patriotism of the American public?
Well, it goes a little deeper than that because this administration is well on the road to seizing power. Tom Daschle, the Senate Democratic leader, the other day accused Bush of trying to seize dictatorial powers. Now, that was a big breakthrough. And I'm starting to sense that the tide may be turning against the president. We have to beat this bastard one way or another. And the easiest way to do it is vote. I mean, we don't have to use terrorism to beat a little fart like that. Just voting is should be sufficient. And I have a sense that there is a kind of a flag of courage of some sort, courage to disagree with the government. And that's what this country is all about, really.
Well, historically, that's obviously hugely important for America, that notion of independence. So you're arguing at the moment we're not seeing that in the media's coverage of the whole...
The American government is the greatest enemy of freedom around the world that I can think of. And we keep waving that flag, freedom. And, these people are flag suckers.
What about the language that's being used to describe the so-called undeclared war? I mean, there have been criticisms in the mainstream press in Australia that journalists have too readily taken up the language of politicians and bureaucrats, that they have uncritically declared the war against terror without really thinking it through. What's your assessment of the situation in the States?
Well, I'm glad to hear that you're talking about Australian journalists.
Yes.
Yeah, well, that's good. Congratulations, boys. There is not much of that in this country yet. You know, the New York Times, the paper of record, has made, I think, they've been pretty courageous in terms of just laying out what is going on. Yeah, reading the New York Times for the past year has been like one funeral dirge, or, you know, just one funeral after another. And so this over here is the most paranoid, most insecure country, well, that I've ever lived in, or, I mean, it's the worst this country has been since I've ever seen it. And I've been covering politics for a long time, and sports.
So that's how you'd characterize the popular debate at the moment, that it's full of paranoia?
Yeah, but now on the other side, we don't have what it here appears to be just a bunch of half-bright Jesus freaks. But soon, if you look at it just a little bit with a different prism, this could be a military takeover, it could be called that. Now, if you notice all the power being centralized in the White House in Washington, with these super agencies taking over, the FBI, CIA, you know, these super cabinet positions, this little bastard of a president, the goofy child president, I used to call him that, but goofy is way too friendly for a president who's been nothing but presiding over the looting of the Treasury and the looting of people's pension funds. He's done a lot of damage, and he's trying to. And he's trying to, his next step, I guarantee you, is to overrule the Freedom of Information Act that is a key to the survival of journalism in this country.
Do you feel like there's a restriction of media freedom, of the freedom to speak and the freedom to marshal opposition arguments at the moment? Is there a restricted space for media freedom?
Well, I think what happened... I wouldn't say it's a restricted space, but it's a dark and dangerous gray area to venture into. Several journalists have lost their jobs, columnists with Bill Maher on ABC. They get these tides of public protest when a journalist suggests what I'm doing now. And, you know, they can try to fire me. Maybe they can. But some people were made an example of early on, and... then they have this argument, well, you know, if you want to criticize like that, you're making fun of the victims or people who died in the disastrous crashes. I'm still not sure who did that. And I think there's a lot more to it than we have been allowed to know over here. You know, the media is not a, doesn't reflect world opinion or even a larger, more intelligent opinion over here. It's just this drumbeat of celebrity worship and, child funerals, and, you know, hooded prisoners being led around Guantanamo. No, I'm very disturbed about the civil rights implications of this, and everybody should be.
So just on journalists who may have lost their jobs, are you saying that people who came out and were fearless in their critique of the government or the government's planning, government's policy, that those people were actually lost their jobs as journalists?
Well, I can think of two that come to mind, and they were right in the beginning. I haven't heard of many since, but I think Bill Maher, there was some kind of high rave after 9/11 that all these people, cowards, you know, these dirty little bastards who snuck up on us and pulled off, I imagine, amounts to a perfect crime, really. No witnesses, very little cost. Talk about cost effective. That was a hell of a strike. But I'm not sure I'd call them cowards, but that's what Bill Maher said on TV. And he said, let's see, the effect that he considered our missile attacks, our bombing attacks on unseen victims, wedding parties, et cetera, that was cowardly. Wacko, boy, a huge tidal wave of condemnation came down on him. And that's right, ABC, yeah.
That at the moment people don't want to hear that sort of criticism. They want people to rally around the flag and support the military.
I think that's right. And I think that the reason for that is that, yeah, they don't want to hear it because, boy, there's going to be a lot of agonizing reappraisal, as they say, what reality is in this country and the world right now if popular opinion in this country has to be swung over to the White House is wrong. These people are corporate thieves. They've turned the American dream into a chamber of looting. Yeah, it's going to take a lot of adjustment mentally.
At the moment, even in Australia, the media is preparing for the first anniversary of the attacks in a couple of weeks from now. Can you give me a sense of what's happening in the United States? How is the American media preparing to sort of commemorate the first anniversary of the September 11th attack?
You would never believe it. It's so insane. I mean, this is a frantic publicity. Every day on television, the president is on TV at least once a day. And celebrations of the dead, the patriots, exposés on Al-Qaeda. It's just relentless. It's like 25 hours a day of just how tragic it was and how patriotic it was and how much we have to get back at these dirty little swine. And I wouldn't be at all surprised for, as hideous and dumb as it sounds, an invasion of Iraq on September 11th. Yeah, I'll go out and take a long shot bet on that.
That you think that the occasion might actually be used as a way of using that popular fervor or that popular patriotism as an appropriate date to launch an invasion?
Well, it seems like that to me, because that's their only only power base, really, is that frenzy of patriotism. And if I revenge strike, you know, Uncle Sam gets even, if that's going to work at all, there'd be no time it would work better when everybody in the country is cranked up into emotional frenzies. I found myself getting a little teary-eyed last night watching some CNN special. Anita was crying. Yeah, and this reminds me exactly of the month after the attack, when it was just drum roll after another. And but there is some opposition now, popping up in this country, a lot of it. High-level opposition.
Look, I'd like to come to the opposition in just a moment. But just on your arguments about what would seem to be the manipulation by the media of popular sentiment, at the moment, what do you think the leading media outlet should be doing? Because obviously there is deep feeling within the American community about the attack and the aftermath of the attack, which it would seem to me that the media is obviously going to pick up on. But how do they represent that feeling without manipulating it for some other less noble purpose?
Well, the way that grief has been manipulated here and turned into a platform for revenge on who? Osama bin Laden? I wrote on the day after that thing occurred that he was probably dead. And it was probably dead. I wrote a column for ESPN.com and Sports Thing. And, to just assume that when it was, first it was Osama bin Laden and then it was Saddam Hussein, it may be that the secret police and the great intelligence operations of America are so much smarter than we are and know so much more than we are and are so much more responsible and effective than we are. That's possible, I suppose. I don't think it's not possible to me, but in theory. But in fact, all these agencies have been embarrassed, have been proven to be buffoons and liars. Some FBI agents have lost 700 guns in 2 years. So these agencies are riddled with corruption. And it's an unwillingness to challenge the word of authority. That is, you'd think, or the old myth, as the myth goes, an un-American way to lean back and, be a sheep and act like a good German. And it's this unwillingness to question authority that I believe is at the root of this over here.
So you would see, Hunter S. Thompson, that in recent years there's been a failure to challenge authority. So the media is actually buying the government line far too readily.
And no, there haven't been much challenging of authority for quite a while. And this president here, this little bastard, is just a creature of his father, the Reagan brain trust. And a lot of those people came out of Nixon. This is really like the rebirth of Richard Nixon, or Nixon Lives. But these people make Nixon look like a liberal.
That you would argue that George Bush Jr. makes Richard Nixon seem like a liberal, which is a startling admission from you because of the caustic way that you've previously described Richard Nixon.
Yeah, that shocked me when I said it. But yeah, I'll stick with that. in terms of just a programmatic, mean, greedy, tunnel-visioned looter, these people make Nixon look like a statesman.
Now, Nixon, of course, was brought undone by the actions of two members of the press, Bernstein and Woodward, who doggedly pursued him, even though initially it wasn't apparent that that trail would bear fruit. Is there a new generation of that type of investigative journalism in the United States, and is this the moment that it should come forward?
Oh, boy, I've been looking for that, the rise of that generation for a long time. You know, Nixon was always convinced that there was a massive liberal conspiracy to get him. Well, he was right. Yeah, and I was part of that, and I'm proud of it.
Now, is that so-called massive liberal conspiracy, is that emerging now in the debate around the potential invasion of Iraq or the conduct of the Bush administration at the moment?
No, these Jesus freaks have managed to give the word liberal so bad a name that in this nation now it's really a matter of shame to adopt the word liberal. See, I've never been a liberal. I've denounced the bastards for years. But liberal is no, there's no groundswell of liberal sentiment driving this questioning of what the administration's doing. Now, these people want to go into attack the hardly Arab world, the Muslim world, with no allies except England and Israel.
And possibly Australia.
Oh, my God. Don't tell me you goddamn papist bastards are that bad off. I thought you were freedom-loving warriors.
Well, what's going on here, as we record this interview in Australia, there is actually a debate about the degree to which the government has made clear whether it would support a first strike policy by the United States government. And the call in Australia is for a much fuller debate, both at a parliamentary level and in the media, about what the Australian government should do. But the Prime Minister of Australia has reserved his judgment, but he's made it clear that his government is very keen to support the US if called upon.
Well, now that's horrible. Well, I guess that's right. You people voted you were all subjects of the Queen, didn't you?
We voted to not become a republic. That's right.
No. You reaffirmed the power of the monarchy, as I remember, over you.
That's right. Look, it's a digression, but that's right. But just on that, I mean, one of the things that the media in Australia is really trying to take up, I suppose, is to draw from the government some clearer position. You know, will Australia support the US? What are the implications of the US striking preemptively against Iraq? I'm very interested in your assessment of that debate in the States. I mean, are there particular areas where criticism is coming from?
Let me first say that that's a very important that you guys get a statement, a clear statement out of the government. And the longer they won't give you one, the more ominous it's going to sound, right? It will be. I mean, if they won't tell you they won't support the United States in the event of a first strike, what would you guess their position is going to be?
Look, in Australia, Hunter, there's been a policy of bipartisanship, a history of bipartisanship, and that's the other thing that's up for grabs at the moment, it would seem. Whether the Labor Party opposition to the Conservative federal government is going to sort of strengthen its opposition to any Australian involvement, or whether it's going to go ahead and support the government as it has done in previous military campaigns. That's a major issue, but it's an issue being played out in the press. What I'm interested in, I suppose, is your assessment of how that's being played out or not being played out in your own press.
Well, we get a lot of encouragement, say, from Germany, France, the entire Arab world. I mean, nobody is really in favor of this. I don't know who, but if you want to name some people, who else really wants Saddam Hussein so desperately out of power? Who? I look around, I don't see anybody else waving that hatchet. Do you?
Well, no. Hunter, could I take you back to September the 11th? I mean, what I'd really like to know is your reactions. And I know you said you were writing a sports column for ESPN when the planes hit the towers. But could I get you to tell that story of when you found out about it and what you were doing and what your reaction was?
Yeah, it was really dramatic in a low-key way. I had, in fact, just finished a sports column for ESPN. I forgot exactly what it was about. It was pretty good. And no sooner gone over the wire than I was on the phone, John Walsh, general editor of ESPN was on the phone saying, you have to write about this disaster. And it happened. I had been going to bed after, I guess my column was late, running Monday night. I was just going to bed. TV was still on. I usually have it on just for the news. And I happened to see the first plane hit in my fogged condition. You know, I'd been up all night writing the column. I somehow knew it was real. I don't know why I've seen enough real life. What is that noise? Thank you. Yeah, there was no mistaking the reality of that. It didn't make much sense. And it still doesn't really, but here we go. This is the column I wrote, let's see, appeared 9/12/01. Here it is. It was just after dawn in Woody Creek, Colorado, when the first plane hit the World Trade Center in New York City on Tuesday morning. And as usual, I was writing about sports, but not for long. Football suddenly seemed irrelevant compared to the scenes of destruction and utter devastation coming out of New York on TV.
You went on to say in that article, which I have in front of me, that even ESPN was broadcasting war news. It was the worst disaster in the history of the United States. Do you think that the event completely transformed the way in which Americans see themselves and their own vulnerability?
No, the event by itself would not have done that. I've seen planes at the Empire State Building before. I didn't go totally out of my mind. People have been killed. But it was the way the administration was able to use that event and to, you know, use it as a springboard for everything they wanted to do. Now, that might tell you something. I remember when I was writing that column, you sort of wonder when something like that happens, well, who stands to benefit? You know, fake murder. You know, who had the opportunity and the motive? You just kind of look at these basic things. And I don't know if I want to go into this on worldwide radio here, but...
You may as well.
All right. Well, no, I saw that the U.S. government was going to benefit, and the White House people, the Republican administration, to take the mind of the public off of the crashing economy. Now, you want to keep in mind that every time a person named Bush gets into office, the nation goes into a drastic recession, they call it.
It sounds almost like the plot of that film Wag the Dog, where film producers sort of concocted a national event to inspire patriotism to take the public's minds off misdemeanors committed by the president. It seems a very long bow to me, but are you sort of suggesting that this worked in the favor of the Bush administration?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And it's I spent enough time on the inside of, well, the White House and, you know, campaigns, and I've known enough of the people who do these things, think this way, to know that the public version of the news of an event is never really what happened. And these people, I think, are willing to take that even further, so that I don't assume that I know the truth about what went on that day. And, yeah, I just look around and looking for, well, who had the motive, who had the opportunity, who had the equipment, who had the will. Yeah, these people were looting the treasury, and they knew the economy was going to go into a spiral downward.
It, from this distance, though, it does seem extraordinarily conspiratorial that you could sit there and see the hand of the U.S. government in this attack rather than seeing international terrorists bent on somehow hurting America and the American people. What sort of reaction did your views get among your peers or amongst other journalists?
Well, it was greeted universally with nervousness, and almost nobody agreed with me, but nobody thought it was the right thing. Just to answer your question, no, it was about 99-1. But since then...
Did you publish those views anywhere?
I'm not sure if I've said that. If I haven't, I meant to. Let's see.
I was going to ask you, you know, for the reaction to them, because, I mean, I don't want to seem Pollyanna-ish here, but it does seem an extraordinary conspiracy theory that you're putting forward, that your first reaction was to somehow implicate the U.S. government in this attack rather than an enemy of the U.S. government.
Well, you want to keep in mind that I have lived not just through, but very close to a lot of real tragedies in this country. And let me ask you, do you think that you know who killed John Kennedy, or Robert Kennedy?
Look, I have to say I was a boy at the time, but no, I haven't read the Warren Commission report, but it seemed to me that, in this case, there were so many more people involved, it would seem to be much less likely some sort of internal conspiracy.
Well, it does. I mean, I can see where you're a little edgy accepting this for me. And
well, let me just ask you on that. I mean, you've pioneered a form of journalism called gonzo journalism, in which it's almost like there's no revision. What you see and feel is what goes down on the page, and it's that first blush, that first image that hits the readership. Does that mean, Hunter S. Thompson, that in a way it's hard for you to appear credible within the US media because people would say, oh, look, that's just another conspiracy theory from a drug-addled gonzo journalist like Hunter S. Thompson?
Yeah, that's a problem. I'm not sure if it's my problem or other people's or theirs. But I'm looking at this column and the one after it. I've been right so often, and my percentages are so high. I'll stand by this column that I wrote that day and the next one. So what appears to be maybe gonzo journalism, well, I'm not sure where. I'm not going to claim any prophetic powers, but
well, one of the things you do say in that first article you wrote, you say, it's now 24 hours later, and we're not getting much information about the five W's of this thing. Now, by the five W's, I'm presuming you mean the who, the what, the when, the why, and the how.
Yeah.
Is that still how you feel, that a year later, those exactly. key questions haven't been answered?
Absolutely. I mean, it's even worse now. I mean, this is just a suggestion. Okay, 24 hours later, we're not getting much information about the five W's. Well, how much have we got beyond that? How much more do we have than we had that a year ago? Damn little, I think. We know a lot about the firemen who died, a lot about the people who stole the money from their charity fund, a lot about the people who donated all that blood, and Red Cross had too much of it and had to throw away 5 tons of blood, something like that. That may be an exaggeration.
Hmm.
But no, I will stand by almost all my... Come on. Get a grip on yourself, Doc. Talk like that.
Well, just, Hunter S. Thompson, let me ask you about your new book. I mean, The Kingdom of Fear, Loathsome Secrets of a Star-Crossed Child in the Final Days of the American Dream. It's a very apocalyptic title. Has this book, this new book, has it come off your reflections about September the 11th and the way it was handled by the American media?
Well, it came off of, the atmosphere in this country as of September 12th. Yeah, Kingdom of Fear. That's the way I see this country, and I'm not writing just a long screed, front to back, some kind of a political tract. But in the book, I'm trying to explain a little bit about, how I got this way, and, why you should pay attention to my predictions.
Is this a critical time for the credibility of U.S. journalism, how this current war is being covered and how it's being reported on and the sort of public information that the American people get? Is this a sort of critical test of the credibility of U.S. journalism?
I think definitely. Yeah, but I'm not sure how much credibility U.S. journalism really has, given that five years we lost 2 presidents and 1 civil rights leader to mysterious bums and assassins, bushy-haired strangers. And U.S. journalism has never dug out the truth about that. One of my great shames as a journalist is that I still don't know who killed Jack Kennedy. And it's always bothered me. It's always haunted me. And there's no doubt that I don't know. And there's not to doubt that journalism in general does not know. And a lot of ways, that may be because, maybe we haven't asked. I mean, when I say asked, I mean, the people who, most of the witnesses were killed, weren't they?
But does that need for certainty, is that what underpins your critique, that U.S. journalism has failed to provide in your life the key answers to the key events that you needed answered?
Well, I would say that, and I would include myself. And I worked as hard as anybody. The rules really changed in this country when Reagan came in and started these test invasions of other small nations. And when they decided to test the policy of no more battlefield access for any journalist, Vietnam was totally different. And that's why we got that war ended. But I covered Grenada, and that's in this book, too. And you could see it forming right there. I'd never seen it before. I'd never seen journalists beaten up by military police and hawked out in the middle of the road. I'd never had to, I'd always had a press pass and access. But no, when the military, the Pentagon, that's when they seized the advantage and never gave it up. The military still is not allowing anybody else to know what's happening in Afghanistan or wherever they're fighting. It's always, press releases or staged events.
Hunter S. Thompson, do you think that the so-called gonzo style of journalism for which you've become famous, and some would say notorious, do you think that there is a specific legacy that what makes that type of journalism work makes it more necessary at the moment?
Well, I've never probably defined that term even to myself.
What do you think it does mean?
Well, from my point of view, it means being very skeptical of what the pronouncements of authority, and that as a gambler, I would say it's a better than even bet that if you question the statements and truths of the White House and the government, that more often than not, you'll be right. And that I just try to get as close to the what I'm writing about as possible in order to find out what's really happening. And a lot of times it's weirder than it appears in my stories. The truth is usually stranger than fiction, at least in my life.
Hunter Thompson, will you be at home watching the commemoration programs on the 11th of September? Will you be among the audience, which I imagine will number tens of millions of people who watch what happens in New York?
That's a good point. That's a good question. And, it's soon, isn't it? No, I won't. I think I'll grab an Eva and take a road trip. We'll just go off and have a little fun. Why sit around and watch that stuff? Now, what I'm afraid of, see, is that that's going to be a cover for a sudden move on Iraq. That little monster will come on TV and say, today the, I can't say allied forces, or I can't say coalition forces anymore. You'll have to say, today we invaded Iraq. Now, this seems so impossible that I'd be happy to lose money on it. I bet on it. But it seems too logical for that kind of Texas thug mindset that this is the time to do it. I can't think of a better time if I was going to do it, put it that way.
Because the nation's effectively distracted by the commemorations in New York, that it's almost like saying, quick, while no one's really paying attention, let's invade another country.
Exactly. And it's so cynical and so stupid and so self-defeating in the long run that you'd think that nobody in their right mind, no president, would plunge us into a war like that with no allies in the front and around that. Really, the other side of the world.
Just out of interest, for these comments to be broadcast on Radio National in Australia, which is part of the ABC, part of the public broadcasting network, it occurs to me that you probably wouldn't hear those sort of comments on the other outlets. In America, voice to your conspiracy theories about the role of the U.S. government.
Well, I definitely will be when this book comes out in December. Now, unfortunately, we're going to have that election up here in November. And that's going to be an extremely key election, a time to, if you care about this country, to really vote. And I've been working on this book for so long, I feel like I've been in a decompression chamber of some kind.
So obviously these very critical views will appear in your book. I suppose what I'm interested in asking is, where else would people hear views like yours? I know they're coming out later in the year in your book. But across the U.S. media, radio and television and print, where would people be now hearing these very critical comments such as the ones you've been making?
Where else, eh? Where indeed? And I know a lot of journalists across the country who would agree with me. But now whether they're writing this stuff and saying it in public, I don't know. You could ask Maureen Dowd and see what she feels about whether I'm right or wrong. But I can't really tell you anybody else. Doesn't come to mind. And I usually, boy, it really is lonely out here.
Hunter S. Thompson, just as a final question, and look, it's a big question, but let me ask it anyway. I mean, how do you see, from your position as a critic on the left of American journalism, how do you see the future of journalism in your country?
Well, I have a very dim view of it, I guess. Yeah, the future of journalism, which I really thought was unbounded after Watergate. But right now, there's not a hell of a reason to be optimistic about it because of the, not just this one huge scam they pulled off here, but because of the everyday reality of journalism is celebrity-driven. The news over here barely covers. I watched the some BBC stuff and then some CNN foreign news, the one that world news that doesn't get into the country. I read the Paris Herald Tribune. That kind of news doesn't get through in this country. Now, you have to read the New York Times very carefully and to maybe see what they're talking about, but I don't think my views would be seen as crazy or absurd or out of the question in most countries of the world.
Do you ever worry, given the current climate in the United States and the surge of patriotism that's going on, that you could be personally at risk from someone who took offence at your critique, that your own personal security might be threatened?
Yeah, think about it. Definitely it could be true.
Have there been occurrences when you've been threatened?
Oh, yeah, I'm constantly, I have been all my life, but not, back out of journalism, you just have, that goes with the territory. There's going to be threats and there's going to be, people are very unhappy. And knock, knock, it's not, I don't think it's any matter of luck. It's a matter of, I'm pretty well stuck to my battle plan. And, they tried to come after me. The federal government, all kinds of governments. I've had constant wars and courts. I have to keep like four of the finest criminal lawyers in the country on retainer. Yeah, you have to fight for these rights in this country. They didn't come in on any, the stork didn't bring the Bill of Rights. A lot of people fought for it.
So that's how you'd see yourself as fighting for freedom of speech in America?
Absolutely.